and the Haudenosaunee that bound them to share the territory and protect the land. Subsequent Indigenous nations and peoples, Europeans, and all newcomers have been invited into this treaty in the spirit of peace, friendship, and respect. Dans une association humaine canadienne, la question du choix de la langue parlée est complexe, comme l'a souligné Alain Noël en 2014. Je vais surtout parler en anglais parce que c'est dans cette langue que je me sens le plus à l'aise. Même si je parle en anglais, j'espère l'esprit de mes propos sera rejoindre les francophones du Québec et d'ailleurs. So the 150 mark of Confederation and the founding of the modern Canadian state is coming at a time when at universities across Canada, it is now routine to acknowledge traditional territory, as I just did, and in so doing, to recognize its longer history dating back. Doing so gives recognition to the Indigenous peoples who lived and continued Indigenous identities and ontologies in ways that are typically very different from. This kind of acknowledgement is also happening at cultural events, and it's even happening at hockey games with the 16th Heritage Classic game on the home turf of the Winnipeg Jets, believed to be, in which we are being reminded about buried and unacknowledged history, as well as the colonial 500 million to celebrate Confederation. But clashing historical narratives have actually celebrated. And so here you can consider the striking title of the new people celebrate 150 years of betrayal. Well, in my address of narrative inward, and so what I wanted to do is address the history of Canadian political science and how it might be narrated in light. Graham White is no doubt correct in saying that no single account of Canadian political science. My goals are very modest. So the first goal is to present one more discussion and debate about our Canadian discipline as part of the American, and invite more mindful consideration of what the present offers, and by start with a very interesting fact, and that is that the Canadian Political Science Association is the second 12, just after the American Political Science Association founded in 1903. There was an inherently national logic to the CPSA. In 1913, the first president of our own conditions and institutions, and acquiring a larger perspective of our creating the founding vision of the CPSA, it strikes me as odd that it is a foreign narrative. To put my concern in the starkest of terms, I would say many of us have absorbed Canadian political science and political science. And this is based on a revolutionary history involving behavioralism as a paradigm, with the actual phrase, so omnipresent is the narrative around the behavioral revolution, that's around the possibility of a science of politics, but a way we tell time and only signal the so-called post-behavioral turn in 1969. So we all know there Easton was Canadian. It's also of behavioralism by a made in Canada political economy approach. Or whenever there's an effort to Canadianize the story, it still references behavioralism, and decentering the behavioral narrative is not to ignore the impact of important contributory or conflict approaches. But the reality is that the flagship journal for the CPSA, the very split between quantitative and qualitative approaches may be exaggerated because scientists would agree that there is often benefit to mixed methods, approaches, and triangulation. So then why does this dominant revolutionary? So I think perhaps one reason is, just like the American Revolution, the dominant revolutionary political science is even sometimes punctuated by so-called disciplinary rebellions. Canada had no revolution with Confederation. In fact, it was to promote the interests of the British Empire. So no wonder, during the Canada debate, which brought the BNA Act to fruition, along with semi-independent item on the order paper the day of the Canada debate. And that next item, which did generate lots of debate because poodles and greyhounds were going to be charged less. This might start to kind of recall Seymour Martin Lipset and his famous distinction contrasting everyone. However, when it comes to political science, even some American political scientists are certain revolutionary behavioral narrative. And when it comes to Canada, it is my contention that the developments, the striking features, and innovative advances we might find when we start to actually examine. And so in what follows, I want to offer the outlines of a different narrative about Canada that's less about views that dominant ideas and advances shift mainly because of generational or cohort individual agency and choice. And so I argue that the organization of Canada's history and unequal social relations since Confederation. And this is the adventure. As a consequence, to understand the ideas animating early political scientists' foundational status as a settler colony in the North American space will help to highlight the distinct features of the colonial present, which I would suggest are giving rise. So to illustrate this argument, I will take a threefold approach, which very roughly corresponds with 50 annual of Confederation. So first, drawing from the post-colonial perspective associated with Edward Said as a national project in which knowledge and power were closely interconnected with settler colonialism in the late 50s and 60s, as one expressing decolonizing impulses, as well as giving voice to our sesquicentennial moment, and better potentiating the reality of multiple knowledges. A new era, which carries all kinds of possibilities, especially if we are collectively more mindful. So let me turn to the issue of power and knowledge at the semi-centennial. So associated with what is now being called the Arab American left, Said, in particular, came to the of the Palestinians as a dispossessed people, and also with the publication of the now classic book orienting that there was an interrelationship between knowledge and power. Said specifically considered power, and so for Said, Orientalism is a manner of thinking and a style of scholarship for the Orient and the West and for the Occident. So this form of knowledge provided domination by the West. So in other words, it was a form of knowledge that was really about power over the colonial thought, both geographically and intellectually. Orientalism is credited with Said's work has been widely taken up globally across disciplines. However, and Andy Knight to counter Samuel Huntington's Clash of Civilizations thesis about the Middle East, by Elaine Stavro to examine how the SARS epidemic inspired a discourse in which Torontonians. Abigail Bakken has used Said to address racism and offer a fresh consideration of the complexity of relations of domination and the national question in Quebec. And the sheer variety of topics Canadian political scientists have covered using post-colonial theory and unequal relations have and continue to play out around race, ethnicity, class, multiple others, stemming from Canada's foundational status as a British settler colony in the North American space in general. However, Adam Short, the first president, and also then chair found amongst kin in America and Britain, which were characterized as civilized nations, and spoke of, quote, certain inherent qualities of race. As a national project, the fruits of Confederation are ripening rapidly. The goal, it is the perceived Canadian problems and conditions in need of a solution that enhance where knowledge turns to power. In this case, power comes in the form of assimilation or So further suggesting the close association between CPSA and the state, and the factors motivating the need for the CPSA included Canada's, quote, absorption of Europe, who differed from the preferred potential immigrants, which were white British origin Protestants, clearly evident in the published papers delivered at CPSA right through World War II. A 1930 paper by W. Burton Heard makes the case for restricted. Similar to how Indigenous people were made to be invisible from the land through the problem. The justifications for immigration importance is high racial visibility in terms of color and feature. And he specifically said that Mackenzie King's well-known 1947 statement arguing against immigration from the Soquiu. I share a photo. This is from the original 1884 painting of Indigenous representatives. Female and working class representatives and perspectives were also outside Quebec. So given this history, it's not at all surprising to observe that the formative decades of CPSA underscores that leaders and members of the CPSA were hardened from Francophone Quebec. There were few from the labor or health fields, less than 2% of members were women, and of those women that were there, they were pretty much absent when it came to giving learned papers. The fixation on difference was a central plank in the ideational construction of Canadian political. This was identity politics par excellence. The The most distant others, especially as goal was to build knowledge in service of a nation that was being built. That is a white. Okay, so now we get to move from black and white to color, because we're going to enter the 1960s. It's not quite. Okay, so this is a replica painting by Rex Woods of the Fathers of Confederation, the 100-year centennial in 1967, and today this painting sits in Confederation. So given the ideational and organizational formation of Canadian and the centennial of Confederation to the present is really extraordinary. The Canadian discursively embracing Anglo-conformity to ones expressing cultural pluralism and human rights complex. And so as a consequence, it is much more difficult to identify a clear effort to rule the semi-centennial era. Moreover, the centennial era of political science involves this. These have taken the form of interest in and sometimes strong solidarity with Francophones, assertions of Canadian independence from Britain or the United States, and more forcibly, rather than merely overlapping with the state, the work of some political scientists also came groups like women, workers, and racialized minorities, and the social movements that may articulate their aspirations. And so as a consequence of all this, the way moves from being merely national to multinational, that is signaling more than local to multivocal. Now, not everything maps on to account. The 1950s and early 1960s are important, but not because of behavioralism, but towards decolonizing and diversification in the discipline. And so to illustrate this, I want to talk about behavioralism through any of them. And in fact, in the really excellent overview, he notes that there's never been an explicit address devoted to behavioralism in the Canadian. I'm going to just focus on three precedents and addresses that I view as hardly came to shape the organizational and ideational features of the discipline at the centennial, in 1962 and Mabel Timlin in 1960. So I want to start with the place in North America was clearly signaled in the address of banker Douglas Gibson in 1950 to become Canada's predominant external influence. And in his words, certainly in the economic independence, and it will remain our chief economic preoccupation as far ahead as one can. Think of all the debates around free trade, around NAFTA, around softwood lumber, around investment, when he went to visit a newly inaugurated Donald Trump. By the way, on social media, worthy of a Canadian heritage moment. On social media, to be the greatest act of Canadian sovereignty ever exhibited in Canada. Over the past 50 years, since the centennial, political economists and also how best to understand Canada's place in North America and in the international system. Hulk is evident in the Americanization debate concerning the academy, which still sometimes has reverberation methods because, after all, American political science makes use of both quantitative and qualitative, animating much work on federalism, constitutional politics, and the Constitution since the 1960s. Sovereignty as one dimension of sovereignty in Canada's constitutional odyssey, and federalism and the Constitution were also addressed in the work of many, many others, and that brings me to political science. Just as a segue, before I talk about Eugene Courcy, the very first Francophone president of CPSA, Father Georges-Henri Lévesque, gave the first French. However, the Canadian Journal of Economics and Political Science was not released systematically bilingual. Officially bilingual is highlighted in Eugene Courcy's 1962 bilingual address at the height has just blown off. Courcy also called on English speakers to learn French, and for entities, of course, comes to be marked by the dramatic expansion of universities and the growth of PhD programs in Canada from political scientists in 1966. This is followed in 1968 by a newly named Revue Canadienne de Sciences Politiques, which was defined from the start as bilingual from this period. And this also forms some linkage with all the contemporary work dealing with discussions about. In any case, even as the CPSA moved to embrace bilingualism, the face of organized political science was widening with the 1960s politique. At the ideational level, it was also deepening. The 1982 rationale of the Sciences Politiques was the growth of interest in Quebec in many areas of political French language journal to meet the needs of Quebec-based scholars. The rationale given for 1995 is equally notable for signaling a greater embrace of comparative and international demand. Another decolonizing impulse which proved impossible to continue to ignore attention paid by political scientists to Indigenous peoples and politics. Indigenous scholars in particular have been building a body of work on is also in conversation with other post-colonial thinkers and regions and alerts us to other. Alford is Volta Morano, Doug Coulter, Cheryl Lightfoot, and Rena Kukaman, amongst others. Studies programs suggesting a new kind of organizational complexity developing in this city captures an extreme and I would say unfair response to the more uncertain relations scientists and state power than is evident in the semi-centennial period. Declassified until that 4C was under surveillance by the RCMP. This surveillance was because of his perceived left-wing views in the Cold War at McGill right through the first year of his becoming senator in 1970 before. Last president I want to talk about is Mabel Kimlin. Remarkable research is credited by economic historian Robert Diamond as single-handedly. In 1959, Mabel Kimlin became the first female president of the CPSA. Interesting. Over the slide. The most recent gender monitoring report of the International Political Science Association, that she was the first woman to lead of Canada from the Spanish point is notable because this date was well ahead of the U.S. Britain and policies, including immigration, which was the topic of her presidential address, and what's interesting is than the interventions of earlier decades. Now, there is some debate about whether Kimlin considers definitely not conventional, starting her career at the University of Saskatchewan as a secretary, university degrees while taking one course at a time, only taking a brief leave once to complete studies, as we know from various CPSA surveys of the profession. With her base in Western Canada and these associations joined together to have their own English language journal, Canadian Political Science Review. Today, this shows up in the large and growing body of work done on less powerful groups, for example, racism and racialization. Given the post-centennial ideational and organizational diversification evident in Canada, summary of the past 50 or 60 years might be to say that it is organized in many different ways and that there is a degree of theoretical and methodological and topical pluralism that is allowed for the creation of local dimensions. It should be noted that they stem more from Canada's history than they do from responses to behavioralism. These, in effect, have created ages. Now the challenge this poses for political science is that it's not always clear. So it's then to history and power and knowledges that I want to turn to consider the sesquicentennial moment. And it's now that things are going to happen. Okay, so that is Cree artist reminds us with its insertion of a trickster drag queen amongst a familiar portrait found amongst them. Monkman describes his work as a deliberate effort to have people reflect, and in his words, and I'll quote, when I thought about it, I thought it includes the worst way back to the signing of the treaties, the beginning of the reserve system, the legacy in the 1960s, missing and murdered women. So in making graphically visible that which has believed, this painting provides great insight into the kinds of themes that I believe will increase in the decades ahead, just as they will confront the Canadian state. Whether we are prepared, as I have narrated it, Canadian political science has become increasingly heterogeneous. We still act as if it has a core, otherwise we would not talk about it. However, learning is how the knowledges of or about those that were absent in me to have not made a serious dent in the core of the discipline in Canada. So in other words, the founding era of Canadian political science. And so consider the following, just that despite the growing number of women in the profession and a body of feminist knowledge, Erin Tully echoes this in relation to CPSA conferences where work on gender, with respect to the place of other bodies of knowledge. Francois Rocher, addressing the period scholars, which analyzes more than Quebec, is not incorporated in English language articles, realism, in which an entire body of scholarship is ignored in the representation of Canadian society. This year in 2016, Science Politique, Jean-Francois Gaudreau noted that the most cited article in English as the most cited one in French, while he suggests reasons for publishing in French, cite in French. Back in 1993, Vince Wilson gave Wilson's and 2010's Deborah Thompson and Nisha Knapp were identifying gaps and concerns Indigenous knowledge. Rona Kilcannon has highlighted how waning epistemological and liberalism and work to exclude other epistemologies and ontologies, and Cannon's striking words, and I'll quote, "At one time, colonial racial ideology, what is indigenous epistemes that are considered inferior, not worthy of serious intellectual, Canadian political science, what counts as knowledge? This is, of course, what counts as knowledge, as well as what venues are valued in the dissemination of knowledge, and who is served in a neoliberal university, we still choose what to read, who we talk to, see. Intellectual curiosity enhances the research process of longevity in global terms, and one that should and will continue. Because of this, I believe acknowledging the exclusions or racism of some foundations can be constructive. So too is thinking about what historic ideas may still inspire. The CPSA was founded with the very contributing ideas to the world, attending to both the shortcomings and present and future. At the sesquicentennial, we now have ones attuned to globalization and the international system, and ones finding inspiration in the political science classroom. One challenge going forward is to actually see, and from there to consider how they connect to each other and what this says about political science, their parallels in other political science traditions and internationally. If Canadian political science was then mindfully making space for new conversations across branches of Canadian political science, new conversations within the discipline are always possible because we have choice, and enabling processes which may foster and reflect on such exchanges is actually better. This may even provide a roadmap for elsewhere. So to conclude, at the centennial era of political science, our multiple knowledges are there. They beckon. Aims of Canadian political science, in part to understand Canada and to contribute to the world.